Hello, everyone, and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon, and I have two panelists in the studio with me today. I have Simon. Welcome, Simon.
It's great to be here, especially with a topic like this that is so dear to my heart. You know, actually, all of us here today either work as editors or have worked as editors, and so we're all book lovers.
Okay, well, and we also have in the studio Ellen. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you for having me.
All right, and you also like to read?
I do. I enjoy reading. I read regular books, e-books, magazines.
What kind of books do you, what genre of books do you like to read?
I actually, I like nonfiction. I'm kind of in a nonfiction phase right now. Biographies, autobiographies.
Yeah, I almost always read nonfiction books, actually, because if I'm going to read something, I want it to really help me. That's the way I feel. But I kind of miss the fact that I don't read some of the fiction because I feel like that's very colorful and full of creativity, so maybe I should do that more. But I do tend to read mostly nonfiction books. How about you, Simon?
I tend to actually have more than one book on the go at a time. Mm-hmm. Usually I have something that's nonfiction, but often I also have sort of a novel, or in particular, the last few years I've been reading a lot of historical fiction and sort of some sci-fi stuff as well.
Ooh, sci-fi. Okay. Yeah. Well, panelists, do you tend to read e-books more than physical books, or do you read both? Helen?
Well, since we're here in Taipei, we don't have as much access to English books. I do read more e-books, but when I'm at home, I do prefer having
physical
flippable
copy.
Books. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And Simon?
Those nonfiction books I read, I tend to get in print, so as physical books. Novels, things like that, that I'm sort of reading, I guess you could call it light reading, more entertainment reading. Mm-hmm. I tend to get that as e-book these days because they're a lot cheaper.
Okay. There you go. And they're very convenient, right? You can carry that around with you on your phone or your Kindle or whatever. And so you seem to do both, Simon and Ellen. And I actually read physical books. I don't read e-books at this point. Maybe in the future I will. But anyways, listeners, you can let us know what you do. Just log on to our website, studioclassroom.com, and you can weigh in on this subject. We are on page 26 today for our business article. It is June 12th, and the title of our article is Keep the Pages Turning. What do we mean by that, Ellen?
Well, of course, books have pages, and keeping the page turning just refers to keeping these books made.
Okay, we want this business to continue, right?
It's also an interesting play on words, because when you're reading a book that you really enjoy reading and you can't stop reading, we call that book a page turner.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being that this is a book that you just cannot stop reading. And so keeping the pages turning means keeping people reading in a way that they can't, you know, stop doing.
That's right. That's right. Good job, Simon. Well, what do we find out in our deck here? We find that this is a bookbinding company. And where is that located, Ellen?
It is located in the state of California. And we'll see a little later, it's kind of close to Hollywood. And that plays into some of what keeps this company running.
Okay, so this company, they're finding ways to survive in a harsh industry, Simon.
That's right. Of course, people know that there's been a big shift between print media and digital media, and that's had a lot of negative effects on the print industry. You could say it's a harsh industry, because harsh means very, very difficult, very rough environment.
Right, and so this is a business article, so we're looking at the business perspective here, and sometimes in, you know, the business world, you have to find ways to survive, and you have to get creative, don't you, Simon?
That's right, I think you do. It's interesting, too, because this is a book binding company. Usually when we think about companies that make books, we're actually talking about companies called publishers or printers, and bookbinding is a very specialized segment of the book industry.
That's right. They're actually attaching the pages of a book together inside a cover, right? And so if you go onto their website, the name of this company, it's called Cater Crafts. And you can go into their website and you can see pictures of what the book looks like before. You can see Bibles on there and how they've restored that, even the pages. It's pretty amazing the work that they do. And it really gives you, you know, appreciation for this type of company, especially in this era, this tech era that we live in. Right, Ellen?
Yeah, definitely. It's a craft that is becoming more and more rare, I think, as... You know, as we mentioned, as we shift into a digital age. But I just think it's a craft that not many people are, you know, lining up to learn. So it is definitely a specialized craft.
Okay. Well, listeners, we invite you to go ahead and open your magazine to page 26 if you haven't already. And we will have our first reading for today.
Keep the pages turning. A California bookbinding company finds ways to survive in a harsh industry. The symptoms were grim: advanced age, crumbling physical condition, broken spine. The operation would last several hours and require meticulous care. But recovery was likely, and the procedure would cost only $100. The patient was a 90-year-old family Bible in need of major restoration. I always tell people that I compare book restoration with facelifts, said Bruce Caven, one of three siblings who run Cater Crafts Bookbinders. Generally speaking, the less you do, the better. The California company has survived for 66 years, while many other bookbinding companies have failed. But it hasn't been painless. Where 100 people once worked, now only a dozen ply the trade. That sort of contraction is common, given the share of readers opting for e-books rather than the paper variety. The e-book crowd has risen to 28% of Americans aged 16 or older, from 17% in 2011, according to the Pew Research Center. From a pre-recession high of 72,000 print and bindery employees nationwide in 2006, the profession suffered one of the sharpest declines of any occupation, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. By 2012, the number of jobs had plunged to 55,000, with the slide expected to continue.
All right. Well, I really like how this article starts off. You're not really sure what they're talking about, right? Maybe you're thinking of someone in the hospital or something, right?
Exactly. I first thought, oh, no, they're talking about maybe a grandpa or grandma who got into an accident and can't really, you know, get up anymore. And then you move on, you know, because it describes it as being advanced age, crumbling physical condition, and broken spine. When you hear broken spine, it sounds pretty serious. But as we move on to the next sentence, and we see that it's actually about a book.
That's right. They're talking about a Bible, right? Well, let's go back to the beginning there. It says the symptoms were grim. What does that mean?
Well, symptoms is basically a list of the things that are wrong with someone. When you go to the doctor, he'll ask you what your symptoms are, and he's asking you to tell him, you know, I have a cough, and my nose is running, and all basically list the different things that are wrong with you.
And grim just means not good. And so we're talking about a book here, and so it was in very poor condition.
Right, right.
Okay, and we see advanced age, it's crumbling physical condition. So basically it was falling apart, and the spine was broken. Now, when we think of the word spine, you may think of your back, but when we're talking about a book, what do we mean?
Well, it actually means the binding of the book, which is the part of the book that holds the pages together along one edge.
Okay, very good. Well, the operation would last several hours and require meticulous care. And if something requires meticulous care, that means you have to, you know, kind of put a lot of attention and focus on something and work into it, right?
Right. You have to be very careful and pay a lot of attention to the details of the particular situation or object.
Because this book is old and it's falling apart, so you have to be very careful with it.
Mm-hmm.
But they say that recovery was likely and the procedure would cost only $100, Simon.
Yeah, which might seem like a lot of money, but of course they're comparing this to medical care in the United States, which costs a lot more than $100.
That's true. Well, and also we're talking about a book that, you know, maybe has been with the family for a long time, right? We see that it's a 90-year-old family Bible, and so it is something that is very valuable to this family, so it's worth it for them to pay $100 to restore it.
That's right, and that's what they say there. It needs major restoration, which means it needs a lot of work to get back to sort of a usable, healthy condition.
Okay. Well, and then we hear from one of the people at Cater Crafts. His name is Bruce Cavan. He's part of the family that owns this company. And what does he say, Ellen?
He says, I always tell people that I compare book restoration with facelifts.
Okay, and what is a facelift, Simon?
It's basically a plastic surgery procedure that makes you look younger by getting rid of wrinkles on your face, pulling back the skin on your face.
Right, it tightens that loose skin. And
that's right.
Many people, maybe actors, for example, will get facelifts, and you'll see that they're trying to stay younger, right?
Right.
Trying to stay young, rather. Okay, so that's kind of what they're comparing this to. They're restoring the book to make it look young again. And this, again, is Bruce Cavan. He's one of three siblings there, and they run this Cater Crafts Bookbinders company. And he says, generally speaking, the less you do, the better.
That's right. And that's very common advice in the plastic surgery business. They say if you get too much plastic surgery, it doesn't look good, right? And so you want to do as little as possible to get things looking good again.
Very good. Simon, now, how long has this California company been around?
Well, the company has been around for 66 years, and it has survived while other companies, similar companies, have failed.
Yeah, a lot of companies like this have gone out of business because of technology, the digital age, right? People aren't reading books as much. They're not using books as much. Therefore, they don't need these bookbinding companies as much. But this company has survived, but it hasn't been easy, has it, Simon?
No, I don't think it has. I think, first of all, it's important to remember that bookbinding companies have never really been common. And you'll notice that when they talk about it costing $100 to fix a family Bible, a bookbinder is really only someone you ask to help you out if you're wanting to fix a book that's very important or valuable to you, because otherwise you would just buy another copy of that book, right? And so they'll do a lot of work with things like old Bibles and sort of family heirlooms that have been passed on from generation to generation. But as people read less, books just sort of become less common. And so that business that was already, you know, fairly small in the book market will become smaller and smaller.
That's a good point, Simon. And also libraries will use bookbinding companies. If you go on to this company's website, you will see that they have information for libraries and the different things that they can follow if they want to use this company. And so I think in the past, maybe they would get a lot of business from libraries. But again, because of the digital age, that I don't think is the case as much now.
That's right. And they talk specifically here about layoffs, which of course means people losing their jobs, not because they've done something wrong and being fired, but because there just isn't enough business to continue paying them. And here specifically, the example they give is they say where 100 people once worked. So in the past, there were 100 people. Now only a dozen ply the trade. So now only 12 people, a dozen, ply the trade means do this work.
Okay, so we see that they've cut out a lot of people, and they don't need as many people because they don't have as much business. Well, next we learn that that sort of contraction is common given the share of readers opting for e-books, which we've already talked about. We know that, but let's look at this word contraction.
Right, contraction just means to reduce in size. So maybe like a balloon, when you let out the air, it contracts, it becomes smaller.
And here we're talking about the reduction, right? This sort of reduction is common given the share of readers opting for e-books rather than the paper variety, or variety there meaning type. And so again, we're just seeing that more people are reading e-books. And tell us more about the statistics concerning e-books, Simon.
Well, basically they go on to tell us what percentage of people are now using e-books instead of print books. And they say specifically the e-book crowd. So the crowd is the group of people that use e-books, has risen to 28% of Americans age 16 or older. And, of course, it used to be, so it says it was from, 17% in 2011. And so, in that short period of time, from 2011 until now, the population that is using e-books has basically doubled. It's gone from 17% to 28%. Not quite doubled, I guess.
Okay, about 11% there, right? Or actually, exactly 11%. So we see that, again, more people are using e-books. And then we get some more information about the reduction, really, in this business, in this field of bookbinding. And we see the term pre-recession. Let's talk about that first. What is a recession?
A recession is when the economy of the country goes through kind of a low where, they're not making as much money. More people are losing jobs. So when we say pre-recession, we're talking about before the country experienced this type of contraction.
Okay. Yeah, and specifically in this case, we're talking about the 2008 recession. Mm-hmm. And they give us, again, a statistic. They say before the 2008 recession, there were 72,000 print and bindery employees. And so these are people who are working in this specialized skill, book binders.
Right. Okay, and we see that this profession actually suffered one of the sharpest declines of any occupation. So if you think about all the different occupations out there, this one, has really suffered a lot. And as we continue, by 2012, the number of jobs had plunged to how many?
It had plunged to 55,000. So that is a huge decline of almost 20,000.
Yeah, they were at 72,000 during that pre-recession high, and then in 2012 it dropped down to 55,000. And is it expected to get better, Simon?
No, it says the slide is expected to continue, and by slide they mean sort of the smooth slope down on a graph. And so it looks like it's going to be sort of steady decline for the foreseeable future.
Right, because people are using tablets and e-readers and so forth, and so that is expected. That's not a surprise to anyone. Well, let's see how this company, Cater Crafts, is surviving in hard times. We're going to have our next reading for today.
Surviving in hard times. The bookbinding industry has had to become nimble. It endured the loss of considerable library and academic work, for example, as more publications became available online. The disappearance of many bookstores was another blow. It will never be as much as it used to be, said Mariana Blau, who runs A1 Bookbinding, which has been operating in downtown Los Angeles for 55 years. She employs 2 full-time workers, down from a peak of 9. Blau's company has kept going, partly through high-end projects for Hollywood actors and directors who want to commemorate films they have been part of, as well as jobs for other specialty clients.
Okay, well, we see that the bookbinding industry has had to become nimble, and if something becomes nimble, that means it's...
Well, it means it's quick and it's easily able to adapt to things.
Okay, and so if your business is suffering, that's a good quality to have because you need to change things up in order to survive, and that's what we see here in this article. Well, we see that it endured the loss of considerable library and academic work, and we're talking about the bookbinding industry. And considerable there meaning very large because, if you think about libraries, especially in the past, there are many, many books, but now because of the digital age, more publications are available online, and so people aren't using books again. So we see that, this industry has had to find other ways to survive, basically. And we also learned that bookstores closing down was a problem as well, Simon.
Yeah, it's interesting because it gives you sort of an idea of the types of work that bookbinders used to do. When I first looked at this article, I sort of pictured sort of a bookbinder guy sitting in a shop waiting for somebody to come in with sort of an old family book they wanted rebound. But it tells us here that actually the work was probably quite different than that. They specifically mention libraries and academic work.
Mm-hmm.
Libraries, of course, when books are used a lot, their bindings get kind of run down and, you know, sheets of paper start to kind of become loose and worked out. And so you could see libraries providing a lot of work to a small bookbinding shop. The same is true for academic institutions, where they're keeping copies of things like academic journals and things like that bound. But, of course, those things are becoming digitized now.
Right. And also, because many bookstores closed down, that was another blow, another hit to them, because that's, you know, less business they would receive, right?
Right. I actually had have a friend who used to work at Random House, which is a book publishing company, mm-hmm. and I remember her often telling me that they did have to shift kind of away from, you know, focusing on bookstores because there were a lot of bookstores closing, especially in the States like Barnes & Noble, which was a bookstore that was a chain store, but it was closing a lot of, you know, branches and stuff. So, yeah, definitely it's been hard.
Okay, so next we hear from someone who runs A1 Bookbinding. This is a different company. And what do we learn here?
Well, we sort of get this depressing outlook. She starts off by saying, it will never be as much as it used to be. The idea being that the business isn't just going to recover all of a sudden after the recession or go back to what it was, because the things that are driving this industry have changed.
Okay, and the lady here who runs this, Mariana, she employs 2 full-time workers, and she used to employ as much as 9. We see the phrase there, a peak of 9. I mean, at the highest point of her business, she had 9 employees.
Is that right? That's right. And the business had been around for 55 years. And so at one point it was doing pretty well with 9 employees. Now it's a much smaller business.
This is actually quite sad, especially, you know, if you love books, you love that physical book in front of you, and you see this, it's kind of sad to see the industry kind of fading away, right, Ellen?
Right, absolutely. It kind of breaks your heart in ways that, you know, we kind of spoke a little bit earlier about how there are trades that are kind of disappearing. And it is kind of sad to see these kind of skills and this trade kind of slowly disappearing.
Right, but of course we can't stay there and just look at that and be sad. We have to find ways to survive if you're in this industry. You have to just, you know, try to find something else that you can do with your company, or, you know, of course, the digital age is here, whether you like it or not, and so you have to adapt, right? And so that goes back to that word nimble. The bookbinding industry has had to become nimble. And we see that this particular company, the A1 Bookbinding, has kept going, Simon.
That's right. They've sort of survived through specialty work. Specifically, they mention high-end projects for Hollywood actors and directors who want to commemorate films they've been part of. So they want to create something to help them remember maybe an experience they've had in the film industry. And so they're looking to make sort of special books, mm-hmm. maybe full of keepsakes, kind of like a scrapbook, or, you know, just specialized records of things they've done. They're looking to make a few books mm-hmm. to help them remember this experience.
And because they are high-end projects, meaning they're high quality, or, you know, it costs a lot of money, right? And so hopefully they're making money, a lot of money on this, even though they don't have as many customers. If they can do these high-end projects, hopefully they can make enough money to survive. I think that's the idea here.
Right, absolutely. I think, you know, the saying, quality over quantity, is applicable here. You know, the quality of their work here, they're doing a very, you know, specific and rare service for these people. So, you know, hopefully these actors and directors are paying more money for it.
Yeah, we actually have a picture on the bottom of page 26 there where it shows a bookbinder restoring the leather on a cover of a family Bible. And that gives you kind of an indication of what we mean by specialty high-end products. These are not sort of paperback books that someone's bought. These are books that are really nice that you might find in sort of a, I don't know, a library in a castle or something, all these leather-bound old books.
Okay, yeah, and you mentioned the word specialty. Of course, we see here at the end of the first day here, specialty client, specialty meaning describing something that has been designed for a particular purpose. And so they're not focusing on everyone. They're thinking about these Hollywood actors or some special categories, and they're focusing in on that, and they're hoping that will help their business to continue.
That's right. I'm wondering if either of you has actually had any experience with a bookbinder or sort of a specialty book dealer at any point.
I have not. Have you, Ellen?
I have not.
How about you, Simon?
I actually have. That's
all right.
Why I asked the question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
When I was a kid growing up, my family actually had a really old Bible that was printed in the 1630s. It had a sort of a wooden cover that was covered then with leather, and it had a big lock on it. It was a really heavy Bible, the kind of Bible you might have found in a church at the time. Books were very expensive, and so they would actually lock books down with like a chain. And it was that kind of book, kind of like you might see in an adventure movie or something. And this book, it was actually written in Dutch, so nobody in the family could read it. And eventually we ended up sort of donating it through a rare book seller. Sort of as I got older, just because the family kind of felt that someone who could read it should probably have access to it since none of us could ever read it.
Okay, well, it seems to me that a lot of people put a lot of value on these family Bibles. And when we use that word family Bible, what's the difference in a family Bible and a personal Bible that you have?
Well, I think the catch with family Bibles is that often family Bibles are kind of bigger and they include a section in the front where you record sort of the family tree, different members of the family and dates they've been baptized or dates they were born, dates they died, things like that. So in a lot of cases, a family Bible serves sort of as a record of the family's history and maybe the family's spiritual history as well.
And they would probably pass that down to their children and so forth, right?
That's right.
And so that's why they would want it to be restored versus maybe I have, a personal Bible. Well, I might get another one later, right? But a family Bible has even, special significance, right? So they want to keep it nice and have it restored if possible. Well, we are out of time for today, but we have more. Tomorrow, we hope you will join us again then. Until then, this is Brandon,
Ellen,
and Simon
saying goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.